Today's program was brought to you by Fiji Water and Patina Events at Brooklyn Botanic Garden, an idyllic location for weddings, corporate events, and parties of any style. Visit us at patinaevents.com.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. We're a member-supported food radio network broadcasting over 35 weekly shows live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. Join our hosts as they lead you through the world of craft brewing, behind the scenes of the restaurant industry, inside the battle over school food, and beyond. Find us at heritageradionetwork.org.
Hey, everyone. Welcome to Why Food Podcast. I'm your co-host, Jenny Dorsey.
And I'm Ethan Frisch. And this is episode 2, season 5.
Season 5.
Season 5. I don't even know how that happened.
Thank you for sticking with us all these past one and a little bit of a season. For new listeners, as well as our faithful old listeners, our podcast is about career changers who have changed careers into the food, beverage, hospitality industry and taken a new adventure in their lives. So today, we are so excited to welcome Yana Gilbuena of the Salo series. I'm sorry. Literally, I just asked her and then I got super nervous. Okay, Salo series. She's a traveling nomadic chef who's been hosting incredible Filipino dinners across the globe. Yana, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you, Jenny and Ethan, for having me. It's a beautiful summery day in Brooklyn.
Finally. Yeah. So we always start our podcast with the same question for everyone. What was your aha moment that really inspired you to get into food? You had a lot of careers before. And now this is kind of like a totally new career. No one else, at least I know of, is doing what you do. So yeah, how did you become this person?
I think my aha moment was when I got laid off.
It's always
out
fun.
Of necessity.
You know, it's like fight or flight. But essentially, like, I was doing pop-ups anyway, just kind of like a side hustle or a creative outlet. And when I got laid off from my real job, like, I was at a crossroads and I was like, okay, I can apply in the same industry and get another job and do this for another 7 years.
What industry was that?
I was in furniture design.
Okay.
Yeah.
What kind of furniture design?
Oh, I did everything from mid-century modern to custom furniture. To like really organic to outdoor furniture.
Oh.
So the design field was kind of like, or interior design field was like where I was. And I figured, I was like, okay, this is a totally completely different, I would say, like, industry. And I've never cooked for like people professionally. I've always cooked for myself, but like, you know, to get paid for cooking something, I was like, oh, I've never done that. So I was like, you know what? Let's just see how this goes.
And when was that? How long ago was that?
This was, I would say, May of 2013.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
And is that, well, I want to talk more about sort of what it means to be a nomadic chef, or how do you describe your lifestyle?
Pretty much I travel like every week to a different city and do a pop-up.
Okay.
So, I mean, I didn't plan on doing that. It was like one of those things where I told one of my friends and I was like, oh, okay, I got laid off. So what do I do? And I was like, I kind of want to take a sabbatical, you know, like I was like kind of having this existential crisis or whatever. And he was like, well, there's 50 states and there's 50 weeks. And I was like, okay. That sounds very doable.
Easy peasy. That's what I did last year, too.
I'm like, you know, 50. It's not 100. It's just 50.
And so which state did you start in?
I started in Florida.
Okay.
Yeah.
Why Florida?
Well, one of my friends, Mark, who is like a friend here in Greenpoint, moved to Key West. And he's a bartender there. And so I was like, oh, what better way to like start the tour than to do it in Key West and visit a friend too. So,
and for those for our listeners who might not be familiar with your dinners, can you tell us the format of the dinners, what they're called, and how the dinner plays out.
Okay. So this is fun. so I do Filipino Kamayan dinners. And Kamayan is the act of dining on banana leaves with your hands. So there's like a distinction between like boodle fights, because like boodle fights are technically like the food is all there right on the table. And yes, you still eat with your hands. But at my dinners, at least, I course it out. Mm. So you get, like, a first course, second course. So it's not just, like, all these flavors just, like, just melting into each other.
And what do you serve? Give us some examples of dishes or courses.
So the whole concept was to expand people's knowledge about Filipino cuisine. And I wanted to show them what Filipino food is regionally, because we have 7,107 islands.
Wow.
So I wanted to showcase like regional Filipino food and not just like your normal, you know, staples like adobo, pancit, and lumpia.
Mm-hmm.
So since I grew up there and I was like in a different island, and I kind of traveled like throughout the Philippines because I was a mountaineer as well. So that's how I got.
Whoa,
I know.
We have a lot to talk about.
Oh, yeah. So that's kind of how, like, I got familiar with, like, the different regions in general. And I got inspired because, like, here in New York, like, despite being such a melting pot of cuisines and cultures, like, Filipino food was still not as prevalent.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you couldn't order it on Seamless. Like, that's my
mainstream or not.
And so during my dinners, like, I would serve like really unheard of things. Like, at that time, no one really knew what sisig was.
Mm-hmm.
Until Anthony Bourdain like just blew it up, thanks Tito Anthony, you know. But other things too, like different kinds of adobo. So there's like adobo with coconut milk or with turmeric. And then Mindanaoan cuisine, which is like on the southern part of the Philippines, which is like completely uncharted territory because it has an influence of Islam. So mm-hmm. the rest of the Philippines is Catholic, but the south is predominantly Muslim.
And so is there like more lamb in that cuisine?
We unfortunately don't have lamb. We have goat, a lot of goat, a lot of seafood, a lot of chicken. And then they do a lot of like burnt coconut, which is amazing.
Hmm.
I'm like, wow.
So what's the Filipino cuisine that we have access to in New York? What part of the Philippines does that come from? Or where does that, what's that culinary tradition?
That would be more Luzon. So that's more northern Filipino. Because what I noticed, like a lot of Filipino immigrants that come to New York specifically are from like the Manila or like the Luzon region. And so they bring with them like Ilocano cuisine, for example, is like it's very prevalent like here, especially in New York. So their flavor profiles are like predominantly like vinegary and spicy and all that stuff. But yeah,
would that be the same of the Filipinos that have the Filipino cuisine that you find in like Daly City outside San Francisco?
Oh yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, that would be the same too. There's not a lot of people, let's say, from my region, like in the Visayas. And Mindanao too. So it's whenever I do meet people from these regions, I'm like, hi, can we be friends?
So how did you learn to cook all of these different dishes, sort of esoteric culinary styles and traditions?
I would say I have to thank my grandmother for that because ever since I was a kid, like she was very adamant about me learning how to cook. She was kind of like doomsday-ish in the sense that she was like, I'm not going to be around forever, so you have to learn how to fend for yourself.
It's very forward-thinking. Doomsday.
Yeah. Like, you know, she was like, you have to be self-sufficient because you can't rely on other people to, like, do things for you. So ever since I was, like, maybe 3 or 4, like, she would take me to the markets, and then she would show me, like, all the fresh produce, and then we would pick all the, you know, whatever meats and veggies that we would cook for the day, and then I would basically be in the kitchen with our cooks, and then she was like, you're gonna stay there until, you know. Yes, I was a 5-year-old with a knife.
And do you think she was doing it because she wanted you to be able to take care of yourself, or was there also some kind of like passing on of a cultural culinary tradition?
I think, to be honest, like, my grandma was just, like, old, and she didn't have energy for me.
Like, I don't want to chase my granddaughter around.
She was like, do something productive with your endless energy, and I think being in the kitchen is going to be good for you. But also, yes to, like, knowing tradition, because I'm, like, I'm up to now, like, I still credit, like, our cooks who have, like, taught me so much, like, we didn't have a gas stove in the Philippines. Like, I had to build a fire, you know, that's to crazy. Start cooking.
And there was no, like, you know, Duraflame fire starter, you know?
No. We had to buy charcoal and I had to fan it out until, you know.
Yeah.
So how do you acknowledge those, that training that you had and those traditions and that style of cooking in the dinners that you do now?
I mean, I try to, like, really tell people, like, what I do is not, I would say it's not like super refined Filipino, but it's more of like a home cooking Filipino. And these are dishes that everyone eats, like they're dishes for the masses. Like, we don't eat lechon every day in the Philippines. Like, contrary to popular belief, like,
that would be life,
but. Yeah.
I mean, you know, but I lived in a coastal island. So, or actually like a city. So what we ate mainly were a lot of fish and seafood. And for us, lechon was like a special occasion thing. Like, you're graduating from college. Let's kill a pig.
Yeah. And so when you said when you started, people weren't really familiar with this kind of cuisine. What was the initial reaction to the first few dinners that you hosted?
Oh my God. There is like so many reactions. That's one, because like just eating with your hands in general was like really like throwing people off. And then they're just like, what?
Are there rules to eating with your hands?
Oh, definitely. Okay. Like there's a whole etiquette of like, you only eat with your dominant hand, but you serve yourself with your non-dominant hand.
Oh.
So there's no like sharing cooties.
So like the hand that goes into your mouth is not the hand that's reaching into the communal platter.
Exactly. Exactly. And then we encourage everybody to share, obviously, because it's like, that's the best way to eat. Mm-hmm. You know, like you can't just have your own plate.
How far into the 50 state? You finished the 50-state tour long ago.
Yeah, it was done in 2015.
So now where are you in your tour? Where are you doing these dinners?
So after the 50 states, I did a Canadian tour too. So I did like 8 provinces in Canada. I know.
Were they more or less familiar with Filipino food than Americans?
Actually, they were, because funny enough, there's a lot more Filipinos and a stronger Filipino community in Canada than, I would say, in America.
That's incredible, because it's so cold up there.
It is, and I'm just like, what brought you guys here, you know? But because of, I don't know, extreme weather situations, I guess, like, they all just, like, found each other and totally bonded and created their own, like, micro community, and they're so, like, well connected and super supportive of like other Filipinos. Like, they were so excited. I was like, what? Like, Nova Scotia? Filipinos? You know? I was like, yes. Winnipeg.
Yeah, that's amazing. So when you were doing these dinners and people first started getting to know the cuisine, like, what were the main things that you were trying to teach people, or that common misconceptions, or just things that they straight up didn't know or understand?
Well, I tried to, like, every time I would bring out a dish, I would explain where it's from, why is it cooked this way, and the history of the dish. Because most of the time, people just take it for granted, like, a dish is a dish.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm like, okay, you know that we were influenced a lot by, like, colonization, but not only colonization, but also trading prior to colonization. Like, we traded with the Arabs, the Indians, the Malaysians, the Indonesians, all Chinese, Japanese. And, you know, these factors, like, definitely contributed to how our cuisine was shaped. So, like, the fermentation of fish and shrimp came from Japan. Influence of noodles, definitely China. The introduction of using coconuts was definitely Malaysian and Indonesian. Using of spices was Arabs, and curries were Indian.
So what's Filipino?
So Filipino is pretty much the amalgamation of all those things. So bring them all together in a pot. That's, I hate the word fusion, but it is the original fusion.
Is there an indigenous or maybe several indigenous Filipino cuisines?
Yes. So there's a lot, especially in the mountain regions. So there's one where you cook with goat's bile. There's a dish called...
What does that taste like?
Bitter as fuck. Sorry. And also very vinegary.
Huh.
Yeah. So bitter and vinegar. That was the flavor profile. And then there's also like chicken that's been beaten before it is, you know, cooked.
Is the live chicken beaten or the dead chicken is beaten?
Sorry, FEMA. but it's a live chicken.
Interesting.
But it's like because they want the what do you call it, the blood to coagulate.
Huh.
So once the blood has coagulated, like that's when they kill the chicken, and then the coagulated blood in the chicken is another layer of flavor.
Huh.
Yeah. So there's definitely those, and then there's I think it's like meat that's been packed with rice and then buried
underground.
So we have those.
That's so interesting.
So
it's like the koji or the trendy rice bacteria fungus that's
you can age steak with.
Getting more popular now. Yeah. They've been doing it in
they've
the Philippines
been doing
for a long
it for
time.
Yeah.
what about like gathering all these ingredients in all the places that you went? Was that challenging?
It was very challenging. Like even finding banana leaves was like challenging.
Why do you need banana leaves?
Because that's our plates.
Okay.
Those are the plates.
Cool.
And your hands are your utensils. I refuse to like have like any sort of like tableware or linens. And then most of the people that have come to my dinners are just like shocked. They're just like, really? But when they like come and eat, they're like, oh, I get it now, you know? So
who comes to your dinners?
It's a good mix. Like, I'm very happy that there are some Filipinos, some Filipino Americans, and like just people who are generally curious about Filipino food. Yeah.
And when you source from all the different states that have specialties, do you try to incorporate some of the, you know, the states like crabs or the state's bounty?
Oh, definitely. I always try to cook what is local and seasonal during the time that I'm there. Partly because I want people to keep cooking Filipino food even after I'm gone.
Mm-hmm.
So if they see that I can cook Filipino food with what they've got, hopefully they're going to be inspired and start exploring, you know, because sometimes it deters people when, let's say, they can't find bitter gourd, you know, and they're like, I guess I'm not making the dish now because I don't have bitter gourd. But if you can give them like a substitute or something that's close to it,
mm-hmm.
then therefore they're like, oh, okay. You know, I'm more encouraged to like use something local that is accessible to me. So
I've seen there's been a significant debate, I don't know, going on about substitutions, right?
Yes. Like,
I know Jenny has some feelings
yes,
about substitutions.
Yeah,
maybe Jenny should ask this question instead of me.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think it's a fine line, right? Because you want to encourage people to understand your cuisine, but
yes.
also just because of where people are situated, sometimes they don't have access and
yes.
you still want them to try it. So
yes.
like, how do you balance that line of like authenticity that's like strict and true,
yes.
but also just like authentic, that's like, are we just being authentic for the sake of being authentic versus like actually spreading the cuisine in a way that is still respectful and not like, oh, well, you can make Chinese food if you just have soy sauce.
Yeah.
You know what
yeah.
I mean?
I think that's a great question because authenticity is always like kind of like this thing or like this shtick, especially with like unknown cuisines or like lesser known cuisines, you know? But I feel like I take authenticity as the way you're telling your story. So whatever your story is, like if you are born in the Philippines and came to America, how can you translate that story into your food?
Mm-hmm.
And obviously like the whole thing in Ugly Delicious where they were like, oh, if you want authentic pizza that is Neapolitana or whatever, your cheese has to come from this farm
mm-hmm.
over there. The flour has to come from there. And it's hard when your country is like I don't know, thousands of miles away.
Yeah.
You can't be like, this is going to be authentic Filipino cuisine, because obviously you're not going to get the same fish, the same rice, the same, you know, everything. Even though there are available products that you can buy on the market. But for me, authenticity translates into like what you have that is accessible, but at the same time retaining the flavor profiles that is what makes that dish so unique.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And how does the home cook, somebody who came to one of your dinners but has never been to the Philippines and doesn't have a lot of exposure to Filipino cuisines outside of the food that you fed them, but like, you know, I want to recreate your, I don't know, give me an example. What's a dish that you make?
Sisig, for example.
Sure. So I want to recreate your sisig, but I can't find pig's ears.
Yes.
So
what do I do?
And is it okay? Like, what's the, this is something we talk a lot about with
at
with
what part do you say
guests,
like, this is not okay. You cannot just put some chicken in here and call it a day. Yeah.
Well, to be honest, like, it's funny that you brought up like the whole, like, I don't have pig's ears, but I still want sisig, because most of the sisig that's out there, especially in sisig tacos or all these stuff, is not pig's face.
Yeah, wait, maybe could we pause for a second and tell us what sisig is?
Okay.
Yeah.
So sisig is a dish that is like a pulutan, that means like it's something that you eat when you're drinking. So it's kind of like the original Filipino bar food. And it was born out of the fact that we don't like to waste an animal. So how can we make use of the head? And the best way to do it is fry it with garlic.
Chop it up into tiny little pieces.
Yeah, tiny little pieces with like a shit ton of garlic, soy sauce, Thai chilies, and calamansi, which is like a Philippine lime, and make it so that every time they eat this dish, they want to drink more.
It's so good. It's so good.
But you literally use the entire pig's head, brains and all, in the traditional way. And the brain is what makes it creamy.
Mm.
So other people have started doing like putting an egg on it, mm-hmm. or like mayo, mm. to achieve that creaminess that the brain would normally impart on in the dish. So like a lot of the sisig that I know, like people use pork butt or pork shoulder that's just been marinated in soy and calamansi so that it's like packed with flavor. But if you already have like the pig's face or the pig's head, like the flavor just like soaks in like really fast, so you don't have to do
so to the authenticity question, I don't know, at what point have you lost
touch, yeah,
right, with the original sisig philosophy?
Oh my god. I mean, I'm gonna cut everyone some slack. And I'm like, as long as the flavors are there, you know, I'm like, you can call it sisig as you want. Because I've actually made a vegan and vegetarian version of it.
No.
Uh-huh. Oh, with what?
With woodier mushrooms, shiitake mushrooms, and oyster mushrooms, mm-hmm. to kind of emulate the different parts of the pig with the different textures of the mushrooms.
And yeah. It has some of that meaty flavor as well.
Exactly.
And it caramelizes similarly to the way that...
It kind of looks similar, too, if you kind of...
All right.
Yeah. From afar, yeah. So, you know, again, like, I feel like food is like art. Like, as long as you know the basics, you can definitely jazz it up. But you can't fuck up the flavor profile.
So while traveling, do you have any particularly good or bad stories from any of the places you've been?
Oh, God. So many. There are some definitely bad ones, you know. And then there are some, like, really amazing, notable ones.
So tell us one.
One of each.
A dinner that fell flat and a dinner that went way beyond what you expected.
Okay, a dinner that fell flat. I'm sorry, North Dakota. But I always use North Dakota because it's like, out of all my dinners, it was like the super like low attendance. It was like mm-hmm. four people.
Oh, that's tough.
And I know, I chose Bismarck too, not Grand Forks or like Fargo.
Yeah, I don't know where that is, so.
Bismarck is on the other side of North Dakota, closer to Montana.
And what was the, how did those four people react to the food that you served?
Actually, it's kind of funny because one of the people that attended was a Greenpeace, Peace Corps person. And then she went to the Philippines during the martial law period back in the 70s. And as soon as she got off the plane and they were like, you can't be here as a white woman because the president just, you know, announced martial law. So.
So what did she do?
So she ended up like being shuttled to like this like family's house that would like take her in. And she stayed there for like a couple of years during
the couple of years.
Yeah, because she was like, I'm on a mission, you know, like I'm here for the Peace Corps and all that stuff. I'm supposed to be here. And then she stayed, but you know, she was there as a witness to like how martial law really affected the Philippines. So she gave us a lot of like stories. Like basically the whole dinner was like her recounting stories.
Holy cow.
Yeah, that was really random in North Dakota, but I was like, I'm so happy that you're here because you have this like connection to the Philippines.
That and doesn't, even, that yeah. doesn't sound like a dinner that felt
yeah,
flat.
Even with like the low attendance, that sounds very interesting.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, low attendance. But aside from that, it's great.
Have there been dinners where people didn't like the food or had negative reactions, maybe to eating with their hands?
No.
Oh, amazing.
That's great because people are, I think the people pessimist. Who self-select is to come to your dinners, they're like,
they already open. Know. Yeah. They're just like, and I did have one diner once in DC who was like asking for a fork and a knife. And I was like, where is that person? I'm like, show me. And they were like, that one over there. And I went to the guy and I was like, look around you. Everyone is eating with their hands. Do you want to ruin the experience for them? Mm-hmm. And if you are, I'm going to refund you right now. Good. Just go.
And what did he say?
He was like, it's okay. I'll stay.
I still want to eat all this good food.
Yeah. So I'm like, I give you two choices. You can leave or you can eat with your hands.
What is it about eating with your hands that is so important to you and is so special to Filipino cuisine?
I think eating with my hands anyway is just like so sensual. Mm. You know, like food for me is very sensual. Like you smell it, you see it, you taste it, you feel it. And it invokes a lot of memories. Like I grew up actually like my grandma was very, I would say proper, because like she was of Spanish descent. Mm-hmm. And so she was like, no, I grew up like going to etiquette school for God's sakes, you know, but she was like, you need to learn like how to eat the proper way. But I would always see like our cooks like eating with their hands and just having like a really good time with it. And I'm just like, here I am like standing, like sitting up straight with like super rigid with my fork and my knife. Well, they're out there and just like feet up on the chair and just like grubbing. And and I swear, like the first time I ate with my hands, I was like, I felt so liberated, you know? And I was like, this is how food needs to be enjoyed, you know? Like you can feel it, like how hot it is, like how cold something is and how slippery, how sticky, how, I don't know, all these like things that we take for granted because mm-hmm. your sense of touch is another sense, and it's part of the dining process. And I really wanted to share that with people in a sense that we eat a lot of things with our hands. We eat French fries, tacos, pizza.
Right.
But how is it that, you know, when someone is dining with their hands with like rice and like all these like meat and all of that stuff, suddenly it's a savage, uncultured thing, mm-hmm. you know? So I kind of wanted to just like dispel that notion and be like, no, it's natural and it's instinctual, you mm-hmm. know, like it's part of you. Like when you were a baby, you ate with your hands too, you know, it's like, why deprive yourself of that? And also I feel like we've become so disconnected with our food. Like everything is packaged. You don't even like see how things are being slaughtered, you know, and cut and, now we just expect things to be so sterile. And when you're eating with your hands, it's just kind of goes back to being the basics and like just reconnecting again.
There's something very nice about how messy it is, yes. You know, and like it's not, there's stuff everywhere. One of my favorite random food experiences is eating Costco chicken when yes. I was little, and I would like rip into it and you would like get the thigh. And there's something very and visceral about it.
Slip this, you know, dip it in the sauce. Yeah. You're just like, yes, all that oil.
Yeah, it's a funny phenomenon, right? That like if Ethiopian mm-hmm. cuisine in New York, at least, is like it's acceptable or it's expected that you eat with your hands, but no other yeah. food, even though there are healthy traditions of eating with your hands in all over South and Southeast Asia, East and West Africa. I mean, lots of cultures eat with their hands, but for some reason, like only Ethiopian food.
Yeah.
Is that
acceptable? I've been hosting these like. Not hosting, but gathering people to do hands-only dinners.
Oh,
and
nice.
We always do kamayan. That's always like a staple.
Oh, my God,
yay. But it's
obviously
hard because we do some boils and crab boils and Ethiopian, but then, like, you run out of options pretty quickly. Like, you can do pizza and tacos, of course, but I feel like that's kind of a, you know, like, that's an easy way out. So we've been trying to find other options. Yeah, it's hard.
Well, now you've got Filipino in your...
More Filipino. We'll just do kamayans every time. Well, we have to take a quick break, but in about 2 minutes, we'll be back with Yana Gaboyna.
Yay.
Patina Restaurant Group offers unparalleled service in New York's most iconic locations, including Lincoln Center, Rockefeller Center, and Macy's Herald Square. From meetings and presentations in the glass-walled atrium, to galas in the renovated Palm House, and intimate wedding showers at Yellow Magnolia Cafe, your event will be perfectly imagined and customized at Brooklyn Botanic Garden. You can also enjoy a la carte brunch and lunch at the picturesque Yellow Magnolia Cafe, overlooking Lily Pool Terrace. Chef Rob Newton and Chef de Cuisine Morgan Jarrett offer warm, distinctive cuisine with a focus on local vegetables, grains, and sustainably sourced meats and fish.
And we're back. You're listening to Why Food. We have Yana Gilbuena from Salo Series joining us today, and we're talking about eating with your hands and Filipino
awesome
cuisines and your book, right? You're working on a book?
Yes,
I
am.
Tell us about it.
So it's in the final stages. I just checked out the printer in Nashua, North Hampshire.
Oh, okay.
I actually drove to their facility. But my book is called No Forks Given. Just because I give no
it's
forks.
It's a double entendre.
Yes, that's right. And it's about my travel throughout the 50 states. So it will have like little anecdotes and also recipes. So
you'd never told us your favorite or maybe not favorite highlights of your trip, like really, really good dinners.
Oh, my God. Hawaii.
Wait, tell us how you got to Hawaii. I know there was like a little process there, too. You weren't sure if you were going to go and then you went and.
Oh, yeah. So it was funny because when I started the whole project, like it's definitely self-funded. Like I tried to do an Indiegogo that didn't really do so well, you know, and then I was like, you know what, let's just go. I don't need the money. And I was like, I'll just do the dinners as they are. And it just so happened that this lady, I don't know how she even found me, but she lives in Hawaii. And then she was like, I think what you're doing is so awesome. Who is sponsoring you right now? And I was like, nobody. Like, me. I'm sponsoring me. And then she was like, well, I'm going to sponsor you to come to Hawaii.
Amazing.
I was like, really? And then she was like, yeah, I've got miles. You can come here. I can hook you up with, like, you know, like a friend where you can, like, stay and all that stuff. Anyway, I ended up staying for a month and a half.
Oh,
so,
wow.
So, yes.
Can you tell us more about just the nomadic lifestyle? Like, how do you, when you first started, how did you fund yourself? How did you even get the contacts in some of these new places like North Dakota to find the venues and make sure that someone could spread the word?
So it was really hard, but I think because we're in the social media age, like, thank you, Twitter, and thank you, Facebook, because they have been so, I'd say, essential and just like they were my lifeline essentially for like doing these dinners, because I would just like put out a call on Facebook and be like, hey, does anybody know anyone in Des Moines, Iowa? You know? And obviously there was a lot of research involved. Like I tried to reach out to like food journalists and like the foodie community or food community. Not necessarily the Filipino community, but you know, it's like, I know there are Filipinos everywhere, but I think food just translates beyond your own, like, you know, ethnic group, you know? So they were really supportive, and I was so happy that it was well received in like, I would say in all the 50 states. Yeah.
And where else have you gone besides the US and Canada?
So I did 4 cities in Mexico and 3 cities in Colombia. And I've done numerous ones back in the Philippines because I'm like, this is so hilarious. Like, why would you want me to cook for you? You know, like, you know this food.
So why do they want you?
I think they just want to see, like, how I interpreted it, you know? And they're just like, yeah, we eat this all the time, but we want to see your creation. Like, how would you interpret, like, a usual, like adobo, for example, or, like, pancit? So, yeah.
What influences or what techniques have you picked up along the way that have changed? Like, how have your dinners changed from the first one that you did in Florida to the more recent ones that you did in Colombia?
Oh my God. Like I learned so many kitchen tricks. It was so cool. Like, I used to be like, I would say like super traditional where I was like, no, we're going to have heads of garlic.
Oh no.
And then we're just going to crush them and then peel them and then all these things. And I was just like, and then I discovered the world of like peeled garlic. And I was like, wow. Yeah. And also like using the sous vide, you know, for example, like, if I only had like 2 burners, like how can I, you know, still cook something using all these like modern equipment that I didn't know about? So I'm so glad that there were like some chef friends that like kind of just took me in and really mentored me along the way. So.
And do you bring on other cooks in every dinner or volunteers or?
Oh yeah. Like I love to collaborate. Like it's good because it's like we, in collaborations, you learn a lot from each other, and you know, there's the pie is big, you know what I mean? We don't have to be like, oh, this is my share of the pie, you know, like we can be in the pie together and make this beautiful flavor, you know. And I think that's what I love. And also there's like so many people who are just like wanting to help out, and they're just like, I don't necessarily want to share the, you know, the spotlight. I'm just here as like your, you know, support system, and I appreciate the help whenever I can get because, you know, I travel alone.
Yeah. Where do you stay when you travel or go to a new city? Like, how do you figure it all out? What are the kitchens that you wind up cooking in? How does it all come together?
I'm fortunate enough that I have like amassed a great network of friends now that if I do go to a certain city, I could be like, hey, I'm coming to visit you. Can I crash on your couch? Also, like, just people, like, basically, oh, I have a friend. They have a cafe or they have a restaurant. Maybe I can connect you and you guys can figure it out, you know? So before when I started, it was really hard because I didn't go to culinary school. So I didn't have that network to begin with. So it was, like, hard just, like, basically trying to sell myself to people that please trust me in your kitchen. I'm not going to burn it down. You will still have your restaurant.
And so you do most of your cooking in restaurant kitchens?
I'll take whatever I can get.
What's the most ad hoc, like, wing-it kitchen you've setup ever had to cook in?
Actually, I did 6 pop-ups in Burning Man, so that was fun.
You served hot food.
Served hot food.
That's crazy. How did you cook the food?
So they have this thing called like Camp Chef, where it's like a 2 burner like outdoor stove,
like propane.
Yeah. Yeah. And then I also had the little camper things or the butane thing. So I did that.
How many people came to this dinner or the 2 dinners?
I fed 200 total.
Oh my God. Yeah. Wait, how many courses were there?
There were 3 courses. I kept it like really, you know,
Did you bring your own banana leaves?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I did. Yeah. Oh, yeah, I did. They were, like, frozen. We even, like, brought in a freezer. And so
Just, like, wait, where did you plug the freezer in?
Oh, we had a generator.
Oh, my God.
Yes.
Just the thought of the logistics kind of stresses me out.
It was kind of, you know, I was like, are we going to be able to pull this off? And I'm like, well, if not, we're going to eat everything in one night.
What was the main protein?
I had pork, I had beef, and I had chicken.
Oh, my God.
They were all frozen and pre-marinated. So all I needed to do was just, like, throw them in.
Oh, my God. That sounds awesome.
It was a lot of prep.
And what were like, the Burning Man reactions? Had people seen your food before or were familiar with it? Or were their minds blown because they were eating Kamayan in the middle of the desert?
Yes, and eating sand.
Texture. But the best, yeah.
Beautiful, grainy texture. Yeah, it's great. a lot of them were just thankful to have hot food, actually. Because it's like when you're there in the desert, you just appreciate something good. And I think that's what I loved, like, doing it there, was that people were just so appreciative. Like, there was no noses turned up because you're eating with your hands. They were just like, thank you so much for cooking. Mm-hmm. I was like, yeah.
So for your upcoming cookbook, how did you pick the recipes that would go in it? You've done so many different variations of things and just different, you know, regional specialties over the years.
I kind of had to, like, backtrack a bit because I was like, oh, my God, I don't even remember, like, a lot of the recipes that I've done.
Do you write them down?
Some of them I did, but then I lost my notebook. So, yeah, that happened. And I was so sad when I realized that notebook was gone. But I tried to remember as much as I could because I did it through Feastly as well. So some of my menus were up on Feastly. But then sometimes when I would go to the market, like, you just have this, like, thing where you're just like, I know the menu said chicken, but I see skate wings. I don't know. I love skate wings. You know, like, let's just do it. You know, so there's a lot.
No one will notice.
I mean, I'll tell them. Yeah.
In the last few minutes of every episode, we do a sort of rapid fire, more personal question segment. So we're going to switch to that. Jenna, you want to go first?
How do you take your eggs?
Sunny side up. Sunny side up.
Surrounded by pork ears and noses and...
And brain.
And Thai chilies. Yes.
What did you eat for lunch as a kid?
I ate a lot of Filipino stews, like caldereta, menudo, and whatever my canteen in my school would serve, pretty much. Yeah.
Favorite Filipino restaurant in the city?
I would say Jeepney.
What do you think of the sort of rising trendiness of Filipino cuisine in New York?
I think it's great. Keep going.
If there's one dish that you could eat as the last meal on earth, what would it be?
Oh, my God. Sisig with foie gras. Thank you very much.
Wait, have you served this at one of your dinners?
Only to myself.
Too good to share.
VIP.
Right. Sorry, VIP table, a.k.a. mine.
If you could master a skill overnight, what would it be?
Oh, my God. All the French techniques.
What about something non-culinary?
Oh, karate.
Ooh.
Why karate?
You know, as a woman, I need self-defense.
Fair enough. If you could be any superhero, who would you be?
Oh, my God, that's really hard. I think I would be Rogue.
Who's Rogue? Am I supposed to know
X-Men?
This?
X-Men? You know X-Men. Come on, you know X-Men.
Not well enough to know.
Okay, fine. Wonder Woman.
No, I mean, you don't just need kidding. To change
just
your answer.
Just tell us who Rogue is.
Like, why
tell
do you, why
Ethan
is,
who Rogue yeah, is, because right, he's the only one who doesn't know.
Why is that the superhero that you identify with?
Okay, I might be, like, bastardizing Rogue by just saying that she has, like, the ability to, like, read. No, that's Jean Grey.
No, yeah.
Yeah.
She's my favorite.
Jean Grey's your favorite. I'm trying to think why I like Rogue now.
All right, so if you
like Jean Grey.
Maybe it was Jean Grey.
If you could invent a superhero, or if you could have a superpower, what would it be?
Invisibility.
Why invisibility?
Because I like to eavesdrop on people.
You could be Shadow Cat. She can go through walls.
Oh, yeah. I like that. Actually, no. I take it back. Doctor Strange, time travel.
Oh, yeah, that'll be a good one.
Where and when would you travel to?
Pre-colonization.
In the Philippines.
And see what it was like.
Yeah, see what it was like. Like, were there really land bridges? Like, I want to know.
Huh.
Yeah.
A particular city in the Philippines or a region?
I would say, like, the South, because I've only been to the South, like, maybe twice in my life, and I think we used to be connected to Indonesia. So, and then because of the
wait, they tore down the bridges, or like did the islands like shift?
The islands shifted.
Yeah. Oh.
Yeah. So I'm like, oh, I want to know if it's, you know.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
So can you tell our listeners, A, where to find you, and B, any upcoming events that you have coming up?
You can find me on Instagram. Just kidding.
No, that's
yeah. Okay. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay. Instagram, it's Salo Series. So SALOSERIES. And same with Facebook and Twitter. And upcoming events, I do have a Mother's Day pop-up in San Francisco.
Ooh.
And then I'm coming back to New York on the 28th. I'll be doing a pop-up at Urban Outfitters
as Space 98.
Yes, yeah. That's right. For like a launch of my book. So hopefully I'll see you guys there.
And the book is again called?
No Forks Given.
And when can we be able to purchase this book?
You can pre-order because I am not printing more than the allotted copies of the
book. What's the website where people can pre-order?
So it's soloseries.com/noforksgiven.
And how many copies?
As many as people order.
But right now we're at about like 400.
Wow.
So if I can print up to 500, that would be great.
Awesome.
And I'm Ethan Frisch, and you can find me at Burlap and Barrel on Instagram and burlapandbarrel.com.
And yes. I'm Jenny Dorsey. You can find me at Chef Jenny Dorsey, and you can find our podcast at Why Food Podcast. Thank you, Yana, so much for being with us today. If you have more questions, comments, thoughts, want more event dates for Yana, please reach out to us. We're at whyfood@heritageradio.org.
Thank you, guys.
Thanks.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at @heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening. Well, that's history of mine. All the time. I don't know.